In Luke chapter 12 is where we're going to begin. Luke chapter 12, verse 13. Someone approached Jesus asking him to settle a dispute over an inheritance. And in Luke chapter 12, we're going to start with verse 13 and read down to verse 21 to read of the account. Someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or an arbiter over you?" Then he said to them, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed. For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of all his possessions." And he told them a parable saying, the land of a rich man was very productive. And he began reasoning to himself saying, "What shall I do since I have no place to store my crops?" Then he said, "This is what I will do. I will tear down my barns and build larger ones. And there I will store all my grain and my goods. And I'll say to my soul, 'Soul, you have many goods laid up for many years to come. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your soul is required of you. And now who will own what you have prepared?' So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." When Jesus was asked to divide the spoils, to divide the inheritance of the between these family members, Jesus declined. Basically saying, "This is not my occupation. This is not what I'm here for." But he pointed out the root problem between the brothers. He still helped them settle the dispute. Because the root problem between those two brothers was greed. And we know this even without knowing the facts in the case. Think about that. We don't know anything about any of the details. Jesus wasn't even told those details, though he knows the hearts of men. But we can look at it and say, just from the fact that they are having a dispute over an inheritance, the root problem down in that whole situation is there is greed involved. Whether it was one holding on to more than was proper or the other one was demanding more than it was proper, greed was still the root cause of this problem. Greed or covetousness, the love of money, however you word it, this sin lies at the root of many sins. In fact, over in 1 Timothy chapter 6, 1 Timothy chapter 6, starting with verse 6, "But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. For we brought nothing into this world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs. But flee these things, you man of God, and pursue righteousness, godliness, faith, love, perseverance, and gentleness." The love of money, the wanting of more, comes down as the base cause of many sins. And Jesus illustrated this point with a parable concerning a rich man. The man was not a thief. He didn't practice extortion. He wasn't a swindler. He didn't commit any fraud. In fact, the man represented is an honest farmer who gained his wealth through hard work and perhaps a bit of luck in this particular year. He had a bumper crop, which he was trying to decide how to handle it. But he made some mistakes. And that's what we want to talk about tonight. There's several mistakes that he made. One of the mistakes that he made was he measured his success in the wrong manner. He looked at his what had happened and said, now I am successful. Jesus told the story to point out that life doesn't consist of how much you have. Again, look back at Luke chapter 12. This time we're going to look at just at verse 15. Luke 12, verse 15. Then he said to them, beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions. It doesn't matter how much you have, it still doesn't define who you are, nor how successful you are. See, wealth becomes a rich man's security blanket. They look at it as saying, how much I have means I am secure. Look at Proverbs chapter 18. Proverbs 18 and in verse 11. A rich man's wealth is his strong city, and like a high wall is his own imagination. He sees it as a strong city, but it's imaginary. It doesn't really exist. That's because wealth doesn't stay around all the time. Life extends beyond this world. And the things we have stays in this world. Going back again to 1 Timothy chapter 6. So we're going to focus on verse 7. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 7. For we brought nothing into the world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. All the wealth you accumulate does not go with you after you die. All the things you might possess, they don't go with you. You can't take them with you. And yet, eternal life is after our death. And as we point out, wealth is an unstable commodity at best. In Proverbs chapter 23, Proverbs 23 and verse 5, when you set your eyes on it, it is gone. For wealth certainly makes itself wings like an eagle that flies toward the heavens. Here today, gone tomorrow. Sometimes sooner. You make that your security, but you can't hold on to it. It's not stable. How can you measure success when wealth comes and goes? Seemingly as it pleases. And then two, the problem is, who's deciding he has success in his life? Who made this measure that says, I've accumulated a lot of wealth, therefore I'm successful? Take a look at Proverbs 27 and in verse 2. Let another praise you and not your own mouth, a stranger and not your own lips. If someone wants to declare my life successful, I want it to be God. Not my own measurement of what I think makes me successful. Because when I look at it myself, it's not a wise measurement. Take a look at 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 12. 2 Corinthians chapter 10 and in verse 12. For we are not bold to class or compare ourselves with some of those who commend themselves. But when they measure themselves by themselves and compare themselves with themselves, they are without understanding. A lot of people do that. Their measure of how successful is what I think and what I want. Some people beat themselves over because they never succeed to what they imagine. Other people think, hey, I did everything perfectly because I see nothing wrong with what I do. It's a fake measurement. It's not a fixed standard. A true measure of success is only found in God's eyes. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 4 1 Corinthians chapter 4 and verse 4. For I am conscious of nothing against myself, yet I am not by this acquitted. But the one who examines me is the Lord. Paul says, I have done nothing wrong. But that doesn't prove a single thing. Because I'm being measured by God's standards. Not what I think. And that's the attitude that we ought to have. We ought to realize that God weighs our hearts. In Proverbs 21. Proverbs 21 and in verse 2. Every man's way is right in his own eyes, but the Lord weighs the hearts. You ask people if they're right, or you ask people if they're going to heaven, most people will say yes. Unless they just don't care about God. But Jesus, we know, tells us that most people are wrong. By our own measure and our own standards, we always look right. Because I'm comparing myself to myself. And that's the folly that the rich man had done. The measure of success is found in spiritual things, not in material things. Another problem that the rich man had was that he missed the opportunity to do good with his surplus. He had more than he needed. And he could have done something with that. In fact, one of the joys of working that God tells us is the opportunity we have to do good for other people. In Ephesians chapter 4, and in verse 28, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has need. Why do we work? Well, one, to support ourselves. But the goal is to gain a little bit more than that. Not so that we can say, hey, I'm wealthy, but to say, here's some way I can help somebody else. To look out beyond ourselves. In Luke chapter 3, and in verse 11, Luke chapter 3, in verse 11, let's start with verse 10. And the crowds were questioning him, saying, then what shall we do? And he would answer and say to them, the man who has two tunics is to share with him who has none, and he who has food to do likewise. What are we to do to show repentance? Is what John the Baptist was asked. Take your excess and give it to other people, the ones who have need. That's doing good. And yet this man's focus was solely on himself. He had lots of excess, and what did he say? I got the ultimate retirement plan for myself. In Ecclesiastes chapter 11, there's a better way to spend your money. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, starting with verse 1. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. This idea is you take what you have, the excess of it, give it out. Because someday later, you might find yourself in want, and somebody else that you had helped is now able to help you. Instead of being dependent solely on one person, we now are dependent on each other. And that's much more safe. But then also the ultimate retirement plan is described in Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12 and verse 29. Luke 12, verse 29, and do not seek what you will eat and what you will drink, and do not keep worrying, for all these things the nations of the world eagerly seek. But your Father knows what you need, that you need these things. But seek His kingdom, and these things will be added to you. Do not be afraid, little flock, for your Father has chosen gladly to give you the kingdom. Sell your possessions and give to charity. Make yourselves money belts, which will not wear out, an unfailing treasure in heaven, where no thief comes near, nor moth destroys. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Where should we be storing up treasures? Well, it's in heaven. That's where we're going to live in eternity. And it's not with material things, it's with spiritual things. So when we have extras, we share it. In fact, again, the proper use of wealth is told to us in 1 Timothy chapter 6. In verse 17, 1 Timothy 6, starting with verse 17, instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so they may take hold of that which is life indeed. God will take care of us. A lot of times we hold on to things saying, well, I might need that. Rather than saying, well, God will take care. And somebody else right now does need that. As God pointed out in Isaiah chapter 58, to God acceptable worship is doing good. Isaiah 58, starting with verse 5. Is it a fast like this which I choose? A day for a man to humble himself? Is it for bowing one's head like a reed? And for spreading out sackcloth and ashes on as a bed? Will you call this a fast, even an acceptable day to the Lord? Is this not the fast which I choose? To loosen the bonds of wickedness? To undo the band of the yoke, and to let the oppressed go free, and break every yoke? Is it not to divide your bread with the hungry, and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover him, and not to hide yourself from your own flesh? When your light will break out like the dawn, and your recovery will speedily spring forth, and your righteousness will go before you, and the glory of the Lord will be your rear guard. You will call, and the Lord will answer. You will cry, and He will say, I am here. If you remove the yoke from your midst, the pointing of the finger in speaking of wickedness. How do you do worship to God? It's not the things that we do. Though God asked us of many things. They were making up fasts. And saying, well, you know, this is the way we're going to worship God. We're going to spend it in time of sorrow. And God said, I didn't ask for this. But here's what I really would like you to do. Help other people with the excess that you have. Another problem, mistake that the rich man made was that he basically found happiness in the wrong things. See, the rich man believed he could be happy because of what he had. But what he had was treasures on earth. Again, in Matthew chapter 6, Matthew chapter 6, and starting with verse 19, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust destroy, and where thieves break in and steal. But store up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in or steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. You gotta remember, wealth is fickle. To find joy in something fleeting is foolishness. We want to have joy more lasting. And the believer's joy is in God. In Philippians chapter 4, and in verse 4, Philippians 4, verse 4, rejoice in the Lord always, and again I will say rejoice. It is in God that we should find our joy. Not just things. And that rich man also made a mistake because he thought he knew his future. He had gained up all his wealth. He says, ha, finally I can sit back and relax. I have it made. He thought he knew exactly what's going to happen in the future. God told him he was a fool because he didn't realize that he was dying that night. We're warned in Proverbs chapter 27. Proverbs 27 and verse 1. Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth. It's fine to have plans and what you think might happen, but don't put your confidence in there. Because none of us have control over our lives, not nearly to the extent we would like to. Life's too short. Life's too unpredictable. Over in James chapter 4, James chapter 4, starting with verse 13. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go into such and such a city and spend a year there and engage in business and make a profit. Yet you do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. You are just a vapor that appears for a little while and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or that. Depends on what God decides. God has control of this world. We don't. And we can't make things in this world our crutch. And after this life is over comes judgment. In Hebrews chapter 9, down in verse 27, it says, and as much as it is appointed for men to die once, and after this comes judgment. There is where we need to have focus. This life's temporary. We're not expecting to stay here long. But judgment is our pathway to eternity. So as the psalmist points out in Psalms 39 and in verse 6, Psalms 39, and in verse 6, surely every man walks about as a phantom. Surely they make an uproar for nothing. He amasses riches and does not know who will gather them. So many people put so much focus in this world and worry about things about this life. We have our focus in the wrong spot because this world is not lasting. This rich man, because he trusted in wealth, failed to make any preparation for the life hereafter. And in Psalm 52, starting with verse 7, behold the man who would not make God his refuge, but trusted in the abundance of his riches, and was strong in his evil desire. But as for me, I am like a green olive tree in the house of God. I trust in the loving kindness of God forever and ever. May we all be like what David expressed. Trust in God, not in our riches. See, the rich, excuse me, the rich man's mistakes are common ones. There are a lot of people who make the same mistake. He's not unique. But the question is whether we see the danger or do we walk on despite the road signs. In Proverbs 22 and verse 3, the prudent sees the evil and hides himself, but the naive go on and are punished for it. See, the fool wants life to run by his rules. He likes to think that he's in charge and things go the way he wants them to go. And in Proverbs 14, and in verse 16, a wise man is cautious and turns away from evil, but a fool is arrogant and careless. That's why God called this man a fool. He wasn't thinking about his life in the future. Only his life on earth, which was a near-term thing. You know, give enough time and people make a lot of mistakes. 1 Peter chapter 4. 1 Peter chapter 4. Starting with verse 1. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourself also with the same purpose. Because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. So as to live the rest of the time in the flesh no longer for the lust of men, but for the will of God. For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desires of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust, drunkenness, carousing, drinking parties, and abominable idolatries. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and then malign you. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. We have had enough time doing the wrong things. It's now time to start doing the right things. We need to begin, we haven't already started, laying up our treasures in heaven. Hope you'll think about those things tonight. If there's anyone here tonight who is not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. If there's those of you who are children of God who would like the prayers of the brethren on behalf, why don't you come forward if you stand and sing the song that's selected.